Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. And today we have a very special guest, author and researcher Robert M. Stanley, who has also been on Exopolitics Radio in an earlier program. Mr. Stanley is formerly a corporate journalist for Honda Research and Development in Torrance, California, and he's currently the editor and webmaster of Unicus Magazine, which is at www.unicusmagazine.com. And Robert is the author of a book, which we've covered here, entitled Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. And he is a colleague of Mr. Will Allen, who was here on Exopolitics Radio just a short time ago, and we're looking forward to his participation here today. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you for having me back, Alfred.
Great. Well, you really caught my eye with several reports of UFO encounters over Capitol Hill that appeared to have been, and I'll use just a term, kind of a loose term, leaked to you, quote end of quote.
Yeah.
If that is a proper term, is that a proper term?
Yeah, it's fair to say that they knew exactly what they were doing. Somebody in the Capitol Police, I think somebody that knew what Will Allen was doing and also knew what I was doing, because when I first interviewed Will, I contacted the Capitol Police Public Relations Division, and I wanted to know, I wanted to verify that he had actually filed a police report with them. Well, the officer couldn't answer my question, so he says, look, I'll have to talk to a supervisor. What is your name? Give me your phone number. Where do you live? And why are you asking all these questions, you know? And I said, I'm doing an investigative journalist piece. It's, you know, I'm going to publish it. Well, when are you going to publish it? And where are you going to publish it? So they basically were pumping me. If they wanted to know who I was, et cetera, fine, that's fine. I basically just wanted them to know I was giving them a chance to comment on the record. I first of all, wanted to verify that Mr. Allen was telling the truth. Second of all, if it was the truth, I wanted to give the Capitol Police a chance to make a statement. Well, they didn't want to do that. And they were they called me back eventually, okay, at the Public Relations Division and said, well, we can neither confirm nor deny that Mr. Allen made this report or that we took it. And they answered some of my other questions like, are members of Congress and the Senate able to stay at any hours of the night? I mean, or is there a special cutoff date or time? And they said, no, they could be here any time depending on their work schedule. They could be here at all hours, including midnight, 1 o'clock, when all these UFOs were showing up. And the other thing I wanted to know was the Capitol Police, the Capitol surveillance system, was it on all the time? And they said, yeah, it is. And people are monitoring that. And there's people, you know, walking, patrolling the grounds at all hours, even at night. Okay. So that was 2005. And then, let's see, 2000, where are we now? I'm going to say about 2008. I was contacted through the Sergeant-at-Arms Division of the Senate side of the U.S. Capitol Police. And they handle all communications for the Capitol Police, and also internally, they're the guys. If you ever see C-SPAN or whatever, you know the Capitol Police inside the building and inside the chambers. That's the Sergeant at Arms. Anyway, I got an email from somebody there saying that they wanted to tell me that about this particular incident where a Capitol Police officer and a group of tourists were outside at like 11 o'clock in the morning. I guess they were waiting to get in, like, you know, how the tourists used to do before they built the underground Capitol Center, Capitol Tourist Visitor Center. It's all underground now. So you can't wait outside the Capitol with your camera, conveniently. So this particular day, I think it was 1998, 1999, Capitol Police are, you know, watching this crowd of tourists, and suddenly a UFO comes overhead and is flashing a bright beam of light down on these on the Capitol and these people as it's moving overhead. And, of course, everybody saw it. One person actually apparently was videotaping it. According to this source that contacted me, that video was probably confiscated because it never saw the light of day. I mean, nobody's seen it since it was taken. And this individual, it turns out, the way they did this was very clever. He was using his wife, who is a current member. I verified that the address belonged to somebody who really was a current active duty member of the Sergeant at Arms at the Capitol. However, it was always signed by somebody different. Okay, in other words, it was coming from a female with this address at the Senate. And then yet it was signed by somebody with a man's name. So I'm like, you know, this is weird. I didn't know what was going on there. And it turns out that the man who was writing to me he's a retired U.S. Capitol tour guide. He married a U.S. Capitol police officer and was using her BlackBerry to send me this information. So the whole thing was set up, Alfred. I'm trying to say this a long way around. The whole thing was set up for plausible deniability. Officially, the sergeant at arms didn't send it. It was a family member that supposedly got hold of this BlackBerry and decided to send me the information just because he felt like it. So there's no official disclosure from the U.S. Capitol Police. I want that to be very clear. They did not, although it came from a current member through their communications device, it was done in such a way that the person doing it is not a member of the Capitol Police. He's just married to someone who is. And he also told me he's very good friends with all the Capitol Police, having worked there for many years until he had a tragic accident where he slipped and fell down some stairs and broke his back. So he's retired. But his wife still works there. He goes there. He knows pretty much all the active duty Capitol Police officers. Then, you know, once we started the dialogue through the email, he sent me a second. He got permission from another friend of his that works there as a Capitol Police officer. He had talked to him about it. They were discussing it, and he gave me another event that happened in 1995, again during the day. Two Capitol Police officers are out doing their patrol when they see three UFOs, spherical UFOs, coming onto the Capitol grounds, dancing around, and then moving off towards the Supreme Court building before disappearing from sight. Now, they had to log all this, and Mr. Allen already knew this from the detective that he had been in contact with since July 2002. He had been told by this detective, off the record, that there were police logs that showed many of the officers have had, the ones that patrol the outside of the building, many of them have seen UFOs, and they've reported it in the logs. So we had asked, hey, could you get us a copy of that? And the answer was no way. Could we get that, not officially, you know? I mean, supposedly they were thinking about, like, getting us a blacked-out version, all the sensitive material taken out, right? Sort of like what Stanton Friedman found in the National Archives. But that never materialized. But we had at least asked. I mean, in other words, let's put it this way. Capitol Police already knew Will Allen. And they also knew me as of 2005. I mean, they knew about me and my investigation. So they want to talk. I think they, you know, some of them really know this is a reality and they would like to talk, but their hands are tied. So, yes, to answer your question bluntly, yes, this was a leak of information that I am going to be allowed to publish in my next book, which is Close Encounters in Washington, D.C.
Right. So this, and you're satisfied that these quote leaks, mm-hmm. that these materials, I'm actually looking at D.C. UFO report number 385, and also DC UFO report number 411, which is from April 22nd, 1999. Mm-hmm. You're satisfied that these reports are not in themselves disinformational hoaxes.
No, in fact, I was concerned about that, Alfred. It's a good question. I didn't know who this person was. I could tell it was a legitimate Senate address, email address, and I took measures. I mean, I said to this person, look, I can't really use this information until I know who you are. I mean, I said, I'll protect your identity, but, you know, this is pretty clandestine the way you're just coming at me off the left field like this, giving me this information. Can you at least call me up so I can talk to you? Which he did, but, again, he was using his wife's BlackBerry, and it was an unidentified phone number, which he apologized for, but he wouldn't give me a phone number. He told me where he lived, told me about himself, he told me about his wife, and... I've had a few conversations with this individual. I suspect he was put up to this, but doesn't want to tell me. But no, he wasn't just fabricating this out of thin air. It's definitely not that at all. I mean, it could have been just a weird coincidence that somebody like him decided to voluntarily give me this information on his own.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of doubt it. I really, considering the context of what we're talking about here. I sincerely think that this was all set up because I think Mr. Allen explained this to you, but without using specific names, the Capitol Police actually have to answer to a particular intelligence agency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that agency is very well-funded, and they do know what is going on. They just don't want to admit it because, well, they don't want to be held accountable for it, and honestly, I don't think they're in control of the aliens per se. It's just better left, covert at this point.
Right. I have a whole series of questions.
Okay.
Just a real quickie.
Go ahead.
Could you name the specific intelligence agency that the Capitol Police is answerable to?
Yes, I was told it's the National Security Agency.
Okay.
Yeah, I hate mentioning it because they just sent a warning signal to somebody. The technology up like that.
We live in a democracy.
True.
And all of these agencies are funded by taxpayer funds.
Mm-hmm.
So these are legitimate questions, and they're legitimate matters of a public interest.
I agree.
So you're satisfied that these two DC UFO reports are genuine Capitol Police reports,
mm-hmm.
About UFO incidents that the Capitol Police officers witnessed and duly reported.
Yeah, it's part of their job. They have to log everything that happens, especially if it's unusual like that or something that's actually a violation, by the way. According to my understanding, that the heart of the no-fly zone, prohibited airspace, it starts at the Washington Monument and goes out in 5 miles every direction. It's a circle. That is within another circle of restricted airspace. And all these agencies, and I mean, when I say all, there's about 13 federal agencies, including the U.S. Capitol Police, Washington, D.C. Police. They all report into something called the National Control Response Center. I'm not saying this right. I'm sorry. It's the NRCC. It's basically where this is a newly created interagency or joint agency that was created after 9/11 so that they can share data about what's going on in the airspace over the Capitol. National,
right.
Regional Capitol Coordination Center, something like that, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I found out about it. It's in my first book, and most people never even heard of it, but it does exist, and they take this very seriously because, according to their own records, that there's been thousands of incursions of the prohibited and restricted airspace. It doesn't mean they're all UFOs, but it just means that it's very difficult for them to control all the air traffic in that space, which, you know, as after 9/11, they became extremely worried about anybody coming into that space. And yet, look what happened. Mr. Allen got pictures of in 2002.
Right. So from all intents and purposes, these two incidences in DC UFO Report 411 and DC UFO Report 385,
mm-hmm.
one in the spring of 95 and the other in April 22nd, 1999,
right.
Appear to be similar instances as occurred, say, on July 26, 2002,
right.
July 26, 1952,
mm-hmm.
July 16, 2002, July 16, 1952, et cetera. Would you say that?
Yes, there's a long history of the Capitol being visited by UFOs. So obviously the Capitol Police would observe these things, especially the guys that are outdoors doing the patrol. They'd have to see these things. And that's why I believe they do want to, they would like to talk publicly, but as you mentioned in the interview with Mr. Allen, the CIA did a really good job of shutting down any discussion of this publicly. And I believe that the reason they stated for that was that they didn't see a direct threat from the UFOs and their occupants at that time, which I find very, I don't think that's an accurate statement, but that's what they said. And then they said, however, the public's reaction to UFOs is a threat to national security, because at the time it was the Cold War, and they were concerned that the Soviets could create a UFO-like diversion that would jam switchboards and make communications impossible, leaving us vulnerable.
Right, right. Now, as we're speaking here, I just want to go and get that particular language from the earlier. It says this is the 1953. It says the extremely high numbers. This is CIA in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
The extremely high numbers of UFO reports in 1952 disturbed both the Air Force and the CIA. Both groups felt that an enemy nation could deliberately flood the U.S. out with false UFO reports, causing mass panic and allowing them to launch a sneak attack.
Right.
The memo stated, this is a memo by Walter B. Smith, the CIA director, in September 24, 52.
Mm-hmm.
The memo stated, quote, "The flying saucer situation has national security implications. The public concerned with the phenomena lies the potential for touching off mass hysteria and panic."
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. They're really talking about the public. So do you think that in these two reports, the 1999 and 1995 reports, we're essentially talking about the same intelligent civilization that has been behind, as Mr.
Allen?
Allen says, 1944, 1952, 2002, 2008, is this the same group that's behind these phenomena?
Yeah, good question, Alfred. There's multiple groups, according to my sources. There's at least four.
Okay.
Okay, so, and I'm citing specifically what Commander Sergeant Major Robert Dean, now retired,
okay.
U.S. Army, he saw this at NATO when he had a cosmic top secret clearance. He alleges that he saw a NATO assessment about the potential threat of UFOs and their occupants.
Yeah.
Mainly because they were concerned about the UFO showing up on radar and triggering World War III.
Yeah.
Okay, so they did their own study. They financed it, and they found back in the early 60s, they said there was the tall gray humanoids with the large eyes. There was the smaller gray humanoids. There was reptilians and humanoids. And then there was human, perfectly human-looking humanoids as occupants of these craft. And oddly enough, they felt that the human occupants of these UFOs posed the greatest potential threat. Even though they didn't see an overt threat, or at least they didn't say that there was an overt threat in that assessment, the fact that an alien from another world that looked human, probably is genetically related to us, could walk in the streets or even be at NATO or possibly the Pentagon or the White House really disturbed the commanders at NATO back in the early 60s.
Right. Now, what Will Allen has stated is that he believes that the intelligence behind the specific incursions into the P-51 airspace that he's been able to document and then signal him through his implant, you know, we're just talking about a specific set of events here,
right,
are the Greys and the human hybrids.
Yes, I know he said that,
yeah.
But he's never spoken with some of my intelligence sources.
Okay.
So, I mean, I respect what Will said, but I think that there's more to it than that. He also talked about non-corporeal life forms. These spheres of light appear to be, according to many accounts from different people, these spheres of light appear to be entities that can transform from a ball of energy,
yeah,
to a human shape and then back into a ball.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they can time travel is something that Colonel Corso spoke about in Italy before one of his last times he spoke publicly. He told that to Commander Dean when they were having a private conversation. He says these guys do time travel,
mm-hmm,
and something that Stephen Hawking is, you know, theorizing about that we should do. However, somebody's already doing it, and clearly that would be an advantage. If they wanted to take advantage, if someone wanted to take advantage of us, time travel would certainly, would facilitate, advantage for them. Here's the thing. I firmly believe, based on my contact and many other people with these extraterrestrial or star nation people, that the majority of them are peaceful and that they wish us well. However, not all of them do. Simply because, for whatever reason, you know, I think part of it is just they have their own turf, they have their own empires, and it's one of the reasons that, I think it's the real reason, actually, that the CIA put a lid on this in 53 was because of the events of 52. I know you discussed this briefly with Mr. Allen, but there's a fantastic book about this,
uh-huh,
particular thing about, it's called Shoot Them Down.
Okay.
UFO Saucer Wars of 1952. And in there, the author, Frank Pistino Jr., talks about, from various intelligence sources and others that in the military, that our jets were ordered to shoot at the UFOs because they were not complying. They didn't identify themselves. They were going over sensitive areas, including military bases, and it was making our military very nervous. So they basically started shooting at them, and the UFOs were shooting back. And it didn't turn out well for our guys at all. We lost quite a few pilots in the 50s, especially 52. And July 19th was a bad day. It was a very bad evening. I mean, for sure, I had this verified by a different source that two of our jets simply disappeared off radar that night that were trying to intercept some of the UFOs. Now, we've got to fast forward to September 12th. According to Mr. Festino, there was an air war, a battle, a huge air war battle that started down in Florida between multiple Air Force bases and the best pilots we had at the time and a mothership that launched multiple spherical, egg-shaped UFOs. And the beings in there, he claims, were reptilians. And they were very aggressive. They knocked out the power at one or more of the Air Force bases, so the jets were having a difficult time launching. We lost quite a few men down there. We had limited success in fighting them off, but we did. They continued the battle all the way up the East Coast until two of their craft were badly damaged, one of them severely, and it literally passed over the Capitol building as it was headed for an emergency landing in what is now Braxton County, Virginia, or a little place called Flatwoods. And a lot of people called it a monster, what they saw, and the newspapers misreported what the people said they really saw. So Mr. Festino gained the trust of those individuals many years later, and he basically did a back-engineered the entire event with the help of people that were retired military that were very upset of the way the whole thing was misreported. In other words, there's people in the military that were they knew that their colleagues didn't run out of gas and crash. These, a lot of those guys were seasoned combat pilots, and they had thousands of hours of air experience. There's no way that they would simply just crash their planes and die, or ditch them in the ocean and drown. It just didn't work that way. But you know, conveniently, the military has a way of, they kept it, like I said, they felt they had to keep it secret, because I think if the military said yes, we've encountered hostile aliens, but we fought them off, you know, that you can't tell people that, honestly, especially back in the 50s during the Cold War. Just, you know, that would not, I think people would have been very, very, very nervous about that whole thing. But
Now, let's fast forward to the famous Washington Post report of July 26, 2002.
Yes.
Because there, and I'm quoting from it, it says for Rennie Rogers, and it's talking about his home in Waldorf, Maryland, he says, it was this object, this light blue object, traveling at a phenomenal rate of speed.
Yep.
His Air Force jet was right behind it, chasing it, but the object was leaving him in the dust.
Yeah, that was a NORAD jet, and they claimed there was nothing there, yet the people on the ground, including one retired Washington, D.C. police officer who was working as a security guard, saw it as well.
Yeah, so it seems that this is 1952 all over again, right?
Well, yeah, but now here's the other thing. Is that you can't, even in 52, it was very dangerous for them to start shooting at the UFOs, not only because they shoot back, but you got to think about collateral damage. You're defending your nation, but what about all the bullets that don't hit or have any effect at all? They come down. What if you do shoot this thing down, it crashes on a home? How do you contain that? That's logistically, it's a nightmare no matter what you do. When you're having aerial combat over a populated city, people are going to see it. People are probably going to get hurt or killed just as a matter of fact. So it was a real problem. I mean, a serious, serious problem.
So here it appears as though in the July 26, 2002, there's a chase.
But no, we weren't firing on them, if that's what you're asking.
But there's no firing.
Nope.
If we go back to September 12th, 1st to July 19th, 1952, two jets were down.
Yep.
Now, let's just go back to September 12th, 1952. You say that there were there was Air Force bases in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and you're saying that there were two extraterrestrial craft that were damaged?
By our military forces. We lost dozens of jets and pilots that were fighting against a number of these smaller craft, these spherical egg-shaped craft that had come out of a mothership. And they were using beam weapons and force fields against our jets, which were very effective. But we were also – we had some of the crewed air-to-air missiles at that time. And they were using that and every tactic they could think of to try and disable – the orders were to shoot them down or force one of them to land so that we could capture it, because they wanted to see, who was in there, and second of all, if they could figure out what the technology was involved.
And so finally, one of the two crafts was downed?
Both of them went for emergency landing. One of them was really badly damaged and could not affect repairs whatsoever, and the occupant of that particular craft died and on the scene and was later recovered by the military.
Right.
Okay.
And the occupant turned out to be what?
A reptilian, a very tall reptilian.
Wow.
Okay, now, again, this is based on what the civilians saw and encountered, and it wasn't just one person. It was quite a few people at night had encountered this, and they scared them to death. They didn't know what was going on.
And this was in the Flatwoods, Maryland area?
No, West Virginia.
Oh, West Virginia.
Braxton
Sorry,
County. West Virginia.
Yeah, and it's documented by Mr. Fischino?
Frank Fischino Jr. If you go to flatwoodsmonster.com, you can learn a lot more about it. He's done – Stanton Friedman stands behind this investigation 100%. It sounds like science fiction. I guarantee you, I've read it, and I thought, no way. This just doesn't even sound like – I mean, it just sounds like science fiction.
Right.
But I interviewed Mr. Fischino And I know Stanton has done a lot of – he spent a lot of time looking at it too.
Yeah. Now, let's fast forward. Given this background in the 1952 July flap in the dogfights, and then in this aerial battle in September.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's go forward to 2002 July, and then to July 2008 also.
Okay.
Are we talking about similar events? And it's just that we have a different government response because we have the intelligence is communicating to Will Allen through his implant, and he goes out and he's documenting them at hypervelocity. So they're coming in at a much more hypervelocity.
Yeah.
So there's less of an interface.
Well,
is that is that essentially what's happening?
It could be. I know you've also interviewed Jim Sparks, as somebody who's had a lot of contact with the different types, including reptilians.
Yeah.
And I think there's multiple agendas being played out here. And in fact, I've been told that not all, just because they're reptilian doesn't mean they're aggressive. Not all of them. I mean, like you said, back in those days, we were on Cold War footing. It's possible that we misunderstood and we just basically jumped the gun and created, they might have been simply defending themselves, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know, because nobody wants to open up a dialogue, a political dialogue, and try and figure out what really happened. But, yes, we need to,
what you and what Will Allen are documenting is that these phenomena and these incursions are occurring.
Yeah, despite the fact that they're not welcome here and they're violating prohibited, they know they're violating
prohibited space. And they're being documented by the U.S. Capitol Police.
Yep.
There is no official overt response.
No.
The U.S. Capitol, despite the fact that in the Obama transition team, the disclosure of UFO and extraterrestrial issues ranked one of the highest in terms of public input, because they had a place on the UFO White House website, on the transition website, which John Podesta co-chaired.
Right.
But when the Obama administration started, all of that was taken off of the website.
Mm-hmm.
And now we know, because we at Examiner.com have documented it, any questions regarding UFOs or extraterrestrials are prohibited of either the White House press secretary or of the president or any White House personnel at any White House function or press briefing room. So they have it locked down tight. So it seems that the U.S. Capitol is on a war footing, but it's an invisible war footing. Would you not say?
Yeah, it's all covert, and here's why, in my opinion. It's not that the majority of extraterrestrials represent a threat, because as most people would realize, that their technology is very advanced. If they wanted to come in and take over, they simply could have done that a long time ago. So my understanding is that the people who are in power, and I mean around the world, in all various walks of life, finance, industry, military, et cetera, they all know that if the extraterrestrials are allowed to have an open dialogue with the public, that the public will soon look to them, being the extraterrestrials, as the new leaders, because they're clearly more advanced. They're smarter, and recently Stephen Hawking said, we're not alone. I'm sure of it. My brilliant mind tells me that, there's life out there, but we really shouldn't engage them. It will turn out badly for us. And my response to that is, you have no evidence of that. In fact, you don't. You just are. Part of that was a PR thing he was doing for his show on Discovery Channel, but the other part of it was That was an official statement to the public, which is the current leaders do not want to be put out of a job. And that's essentially what would happen in very short order if advanced extraterrestrials were allowed to interface with us openly.
Meaning it would be a civilization that's out of a job. That is, we can call the permanent war economy. In other words, a mode of organizing the world civilization around permanent war.
Yeah, it would be the end of the world as we know it. It doesn't mean the end of life. It just means that things would reset into a new order of life. But the current leaders would be out of a job.
Yeah. Now, does it seem to you that there are active hostilities between extraterrestrials and the national security state?
Only in so much as the shadow government is doing everything it can to keep this lid on this, and they've used advanced technology, some of it that is stolen from the aliens, to basically keep the good guys out as much as possible, because like I say, you know, these guys have everything to lose except their lives, in my opinion. And I know you'd said something about an amnesty program for them.
Well, one of the concepts that Jim Sparks states.
Oh, that's right.
Is that he met with a delegation of reptilians and greys.
That's right.
Who knew that he was being sent out as a messenger because he was like an 18-year trustee.
Yeah, it was a rough time for him.
And so he was being sent out with a message to the world saying, look, the national security state has broken all of their agreements with us. We gave them technology that was meant for the betterment of the Earth's environment.
Right.
They have adapted that for warfare.
Right.
All of this has to come out, and we need a truth amnesty because there are people in the national security state that want to talk about this.
Yes.
But there's too much potential for criminal liability because too many abuses have taken place.
Well, and not only that, one of my sources, it does work for an intelligence agency, and he's somebody I trust very intimately. And he told me that the people that are in power they'll defend their position. And so what we know about false flag operations is that we have to be very careful about how we proceed with disclosure and ultimately exopolitical diplomacy, because the people that are in power will do anything to keep their positions of power, including creating disasters or war among the people of Earth, just so that they can maintain their positions of power.
So that one could say then that the incursions of P-51 protected airspace by a non-violent and to all intents and purposes non-hostile, mm-hmm. non-overtly hostile, hyperdimensional intelligence, one of the purposes is to publicly signal that they're there. And, you know, so that nobody can pin anything on them. And people like Will Allen and yourself and newspapers like Examiner.com and yourself through your books and Will Allen through his photographs
mm-hmm.
are really getting the word out to the world that there's a hyperdimensional reality and it's happening and the military and the national security state of the U.S. is still taking a public position of denial, which is non-functional.
Well, it's gradually slipping, okay?
Uh-huh.
Because there are people inside the intelligence community who have been against this for quite some time. I mean, in other words, they want the truth to come out, just like people within the Capitol Police really do want the information to come out.
Right.
But at the same time, they also recognize that they have to gradually educate people or acclimate them to this because they don't want to destabilize society. So in some regard, I understand. You have to be gentle about waking people up from their slumber.
Right.
Part of the truth, I believe, that will come out in the future is that it'll be revealed that we were all starseed brought here. That Zachary Sitchin talks a little bit about this genetic manipulation. I don't know if it was with apes or what, but clearly humans do exist throughout the galaxies, and doesn't mean they're all good. Just because you fly a saucer and it's advanced technology doesn't mean your agenda is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep that in mind that if it's a reptilian, that doesn't mean they're automatically bad. If it's a gray, who knows? You have to take it on a case by case because, you know, there's good people, there's good bad people, right? Same thing holds true for the extraterrestrials. But I say this with an absolute certainty. We are all related. We were all created by the same creator in the same universe. So the other thing, though, as far as the secrecy, why we have like a mass amnesia about how we got here and who we really are, I think that serves the advantage of imperialist overlords. What a mouthful that is.
Whoa.
Sorry. Whether they're from this planet or from other planets, they basically have an imperial mindset where they want to control. They set up empires. They need to dominate through manipulation and lies and intimidation. And I don't think that's unique to Earth. I really believe that, you know, according to some of the accounts that I've read, who knows if it's true, but this is not something unique to our world. In other words, a dark side to intelligent life does exist beyond Earth.
Well, now, do you see a trend in current encounters or incursions or hyperdimensional manifestations in the P-51 restricted airspace?
You know, I've at this
around,
point
around Capitol Hill and, you know, that whole area?
Yeah, I do. Actually, it's a very good question. I mean, at this point, I should tell your listeners, I've got 725 reports of UFOs and or ETs in the District of Columbia starting from 1850 to the present, 2010. So, and it's not over yet, okay? This thing is far from over. But let's just look at this particular decade. You remember the millennial celebration that happened around the world? It was also, there was a huge event on the National Mall with fireworks and entertainment from people like Bono and whoever. I think Bill Clinton made a speech there too. But anyway, after it was over, people were leaving the area and they started to encounter UFOs. And, I mean, this was one of the largest mass sightings on the mall ever, and it didn't get reported, really, except by one guy named Dave Wisby, who's a map maker in Colorado. I guess he's originally from the D.C. area, but anyway, he and his girlfriend or wife, whatever, they were just leaving the area when they saw these three cigar-shaped UFOs appearing over the crowd. And he got kind of swept into the crowd and went down into the escalator down to the subway at Foggy Bottom.
Uh-huh.
Later, because he put out that information with sketches, he found another witness. And what witness number two said is phenomenal. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling that the Washington, D.C. police were there. I believe undercover agents were there. There may even been a human alien there. At the time, but what he said was, and it's all in my next book, Close Encounters in Washington, D.C., he said that he and his significant other were there. It was about 1 in the morning, and that the cigar-shaped ships were there, and then there was these smaller craft coming out of them, and they were swooping down on the crowd. And that he says the D.C. police were acting like they were scared out of their mind. They didn't know what to do. But the crowd was actually quite peaceful. They were sort of cheering it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I think a lot of them were probably drinking or whatever. But, I mean, because it was a New Year's Eve thing, right?
Right.
But there was one of the largest mass sightings ever. And you know there was a lot of people there with cameras.
Right.
None of that footage ever made it to the public. You know, it was never reported. And there was also thousands of eyewitnesses that haven't come forward. Now, what was really strange about what witness number two says is as a lot of people were heading down the escalators, there was this one human guy coming up, and that he was dressed in a very fine three-piece suit, and he seemed completely at ease with the event. I mean, he wasn't bothered at all. He was just smiling. And they said they got a really strange vibe from this guy. I mean, almost like they said euphoric when they were around him. And they talked to him a little bit, and asked him, you know, what do you think about this? And I don't have the comments in front of me, but basically he told this couple, he says, these people are not going to remember this tomorrow. Now, I don't know how he knew that, but it's sort of, and this is probably a terrible analogy, but it reminds me of Men in Black when they used the neuralizer on the crowd. And just basically, now, I would normally not even mention that, except I know people who have had so-called abduction or contact with the ETs who have literally had part of their memory erased for their own benefit.
Sure. Now, this is on the New Year's Eve of 12/31/99 to 1/1/2000.
Yes, the millennial celebration.
Right.
Right. And there was I think they say there was over a million people on the mall for it.
Wow.
Maybe not at 1 o'clock in the morning when the UFOs showed up, but clearly they were watching, and at that point they felt comfortable coming. At some point they were chased out by military helicopters, and they came right back. So this is a really weird cat and mouse game that's going on here, honestly. And I think that if anybody, when my next book comes out, if you have the time, if you sit there and read through even a few hundred of these reports especially this current decade is actually, I told you off the air, statistically, the decade we're in now, there's been more reports in this decade than any other time in history except for the 1950s. So it's clearly accelerating, Alfred, I think this is for our evolution. I think they're trying to help us evolve, and it's not just technology. We need to know who we are. We are not just evolved apes. We are not that at all. We are star people that are basically stuck here. We're earthbound for this period of time, and we shouldn't be. I don't think that was the Creator's intention. At this point, you know, if you look at our space program, somebody sabotaged that. We should have already been on Mars. We should have set foot on Mars, but somebody doesn't want us to do that.
Well, Well, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Why do you think that here we have, on the one hand, a situation where we have frequent incursions of the P-51 airspace,
mm-hmm.
but then we have the situation on July 26, 2002,
mm-hmm.
and there's a chase. Why do we have a chase there?
Because I'm just guessing now, but probably the National Security Agency called NORAD because they saw what was coming in. And they said, you can't let these guys go back to the Capitol again and land.
Uh-huh.
Chase them out of there. Now, oddly enough, a few years ago, coincidentally, I should say, Mr. Allen was sitting in a dentist's office.
I see.
And there was a pretty girl there, and he started talking to her, and he showed her. He didn't know he had no idea what her vocation was. But he said to her, you know, hey, look at these pictures I took at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, oh, that's what I chased on July 26, 2002. She says, what? She says, yeah, I was Army Air Reserve, was it? No, Air Force Reserve pilot and Air National Guard. That's what it was, Air National Guard pilot. She said, I was a co-pilot with the jets that went out that night, and she says, we chased that thing. And she says, when I got back, I was debriefed, and then they dismissed me. I haven't flown since. So, but she didn't want to give, she recognized that he was really interested, and she didn't want to give him a name, phone number, anything. It's just, it was just the universe's way of saying, hey, look, you know, not only that, I'll tell you something else he didn't mention to you, I don't think, is that when he contacted NORAD and said, hey, you guys said there's nothing up there, then what is this?
Yeah.
You know, and he sent him the pictures. This particular officer, I forget his rank, but he contacted Will and tried to intimidate him. And now you got to understand, Mr. Allen's father was a high-ranking Air Force officer to the time he passed away in 2002. And so Will, growing up on military bases, knows the drill. And when this guy tried to talk to him that way, he just said, hey, you have no authority to tell me what to do. I am a private citizen. Basically, just stick it.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to listen to you. I don't have to listen to you, and I'm doing what I'm doing. So, you know,
right.
But it was bizarre that they were going to try and intimidate him. You know, I mean, even Will's father, before he passed away, Will showed him basically on his deathbed. He said, "Dad, you know, I got to show you these pictures I took at the Capitol." And his father got kind of upset with him and said, "Don't ever show those to anybody."
Right.
Okay. So what Will didn't tell him is that he'd already took him to the Capitol Police, and he tried to shop them to ABC News. They wouldn't touch it. National Geographic showed some interest in it, but the editor that said he would run the story, he got canned. I don't know if there's a connection or not. I got to mention something, though. That article you did about Will Allen, that is getting a lot of people's attention. In fact, I don't know if Will told you this, but he just told me today, Politico is going to interview him.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, we'll see if they try to put a spin on it or if they'll actually report it as straight news. I don't know. But at least people are paying attention.
Right, right. So what we're doing is that there's a beginning of an acceleration of the disclosure process because of the documentation and because we're dealing with the P-51 airspace and because we're dealing with very specific agencies, including the White House, the U.S. Capitol Police, the Obama transition, the Obama press office and press secretary. Now, it seems as though then that there is, one would say, a frequent byplay between the intelligence behind the extraterrestrials, and there's kind of a cat-and-mouse game over Area P-51 that very rapid hyperdimensional access through hypervelocity stargates and things like photography by Will Allen, who will arrive there on a pre-signal basis, will take place. But as soon as there is a more overt appearance like occurred in Waldorf, Maryland, July 26, 2002, then the NSA and we're just kind of speculating here, but the NSA and the Air Force would come in as documented by the pilot in the dentist office.
Well, she's unofficially. She wouldn't come on the record, but I said, people on the ground saw the jets chasing these UFOs. And the blue one, the blue UFO is exactly what Will photographed.
Yeah.
Okay, 10 days earlier, landing on the Capitol roof, which I still find that curious why they did that, other than to say, look, this is you, okay, do you remember Native American culture that they, when they would, sometimes when they get into skirmishes, they would count coup, where you literally touch your enemy was actually more shameful than if you killed him?
Right.
Do you remember that? I mean, that's part of the history. It's like, it's a psychological thing, and it was very political, to do that. And I'm sure they were making a statement. You know what they say, actions are louder than words. So at this point, because they're not allowed to speak to us directly, the images are telling us a story.
So that's a very astute observation. So this is part of, I hate to use the term, because it brings in, let's call it asymmetrical communication.
Mm-hmm.
We had coined the term extraterrestrial context communication.
Right.
And that is that it's a context communication. From a military point of view, say somebody over at NSA might call it dimensional asymmetrical warfare.
Mm-hmm.
But that's applying a warfare context to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it might be a contextual communication if you're looking at it from a societal point of view.
Right. Well, and that's the thing why Will and I work very well together. And it's because when I took his story and placed it into context, But what I found was the context was a lot more complicated and a much larger matrix than I ever even imagined. So, you know, I find 100 reports to analyze those, 200, 300, 400, and I'm thinking, God, how many more of these things are out there? And when I recently broke the 700 mark, I go, that's it, I give up. I mean, there could be thousands of reports out there that I haven't had access to yet. And at some point it becomes redundant, but a lot of these things actually corroborate each other, and it gives you it really gives you a richer understanding of the behavior, certain repeating things, you know, behaviors about not only the technology or the UFO itself, but the entities behind it. Clearly, they're not that. They cannot all be hostile, because we would have seen evidence of that, and we're not seeing evidence of that.
Right.
In D.C. anyway, specifically in D.C.
Yeah, you know, we're just in the last 20 or 30 seconds here. We really appreciate your being with us, Robert, and
my pleasure.
We want to say that we want to have both you and Will Allen back as this story continues to break over time.
Okay.
Where can people go to track the story in the meantime?
Okay. The only place you can get my book and get updates, including photographs that I've been collecting outside of what Will Allen has, is at unicusmagazine.com. It's spelled UNICUS magazine.com. Click on books, and that'll take you to my DC UFO investigation. It's 5 years as this. This is marking 5 years, but I am not done, because believe me, there's something huge coming very soon.
Well, on that note, which is has us all kind of on the edge of our seats, literally, we're going to leave you for now. This has been this is Exopolitics Radio. We've been with Robert Stanley, the editor of Unicus Magazine and the author of Close Encounters on Capitol Hill and a forthcoming book in 2010. What's the title of your book?
Close Encounters in Washington, D.C. It's part of a series, the Close Encounters series, I guess.
Excellent. this is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.